Kevin, I'm giving up in terms of trying to interpret the markets. We've got Bitcoin rallying to all-time highs. Gold is also rallying. We've got a stronger US dollar. Talk to me about how you are interpreting all these signals right now.
So obviously what's playing out in a very substantial way is the expectation of what Trump will introduce once he's inaugurated and what that would mean for the US economy. I think that's the focus. People aren't really focusing on what could then transpire. In other words, what would be the reaction from, say, China if you introduce tariffs, or what would be the reaction from other participants? At the moment, the focus is very much the US introduces a whole range of measures which benefits the US. And there's no doubt that Trump's policies are all about benefiting the US. And yes, they will have initially that effect. And I think that together with this sense of deregulation, in other words, you have an expectation that he will make it easier for cryptocurrencies to operate and that the people he's appointed to his cabinet are very much on sides with the type of policy framework that he's been putting forward. So you have a sense that nobody in a senior position within the Trump administration is going to push back against any of these policy initiatives. And so you have an overwhelming idea that they're going to move quickly. They are not going to hang around. This is not a group of people who are going to try to build consensus to try and get everybody on board before you make a decision.
Do you hold Bitcoin, Mr. Lings? Do you have a portfolio with Bitcoin exposure?
No, I do not. I do not have any Bitcoin whatsoever to my detriment. So it's one of those things. So I look at it more from a regulatory perspective. And at some point, this is going to be a problem for any major central bank. If I look at all the efforts that have been undertaken by the US particular to follow transactions, to make sure transactions are more disclosed, to have more information on where flows are going, to then have Bitcoin flourish in that environment, it's not sustainable. Otherwise, the US administration is going to lose control on a lot of their key initiatives that they've been trying to implement in recent years to curb illegal activity. So under Trump administration, I guess the idea is that they will be more lenient to that type of thing. But longer term, I'd be skeptical that they can allow that to transpire.
What does all of this mean for the average South African?
So in the short term, it's good for markets. By that, I mean it's good for equity markets in the US. It's not really good for bond markets in general, certainly not for the US bond market. It's not good for global equity markets because the expectation is that many countries, including the euro area, will come under pressure because of what Trump wants to implement. And so this is very much, if you've got exposure to US equities, it's great. South African equities, you would say, aren't faring nearly as well. And then you've got to consider down the line, what are the implications of what Trump wants to implement? And are those implications good or bad? And how do you benefit from them? And there's no doubt in my mind that it's not good for the world economy. I think people don't understand how important global trade is to global growth. Because over many decades, the world has become a lot more globalized, and international trade is unbelievably important to the vibrancy of world economy. And what he's going to do is stifle the ability for world trade to flourish. That stifles world growth. And obviously, they're hoping that they will win from that initiative. I'm personally skeptical. Very difficult for the US to be an island, to kind of isolate itself entirely from the rest of the world. Plus, I think the other response from, say, China and other groupings of countries will also have an impact. So for the South African, it means we're entering an environment of increased uncertainty, of concerns about a slowdown in global growth, specific implications for South Africa in terms of our potential for imports and exports, and also an environment where the Federal Reserve is unfortunately likely to keep interest rates a little bit more elevated because they themselves are not going to know what does this all mean for inflation. And you can see that there's going to emerge, there already is, but you're going to see a conflict emerge between the Federal Reserve and the Trump administration on the policy agenda.
Well, let's bring it home. We saw an interest rate cut in South Africa last week. And the reality is that it was only 25 basis points. South African Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Ganyago is saying there wasn't even a consideration that it would be 50 basis points. It was squarely only 25 basis points. And the reality is because there is uncertainty in the system. What do you read into those words?
So very cautious. We had a conference call with the Reserve Bank this morning, which is after the day after the MPC, where we can ask them more questions. Very, very conservative approach to setting monetary policy. And they feel that internationally, there is now a more conservative approach. They meet regularly with the Bank of International Settlements and the other central banks. They engage with the Federal Reserve. So they've got a good idea of what the European Central Bank, what the Federal Reserve Bank of England are thinking under current circumstances. And their message back to us is, we need to be very cautious. But think about how cautious they are being, because you've got an inflation rate of 2.8%. That's incredibly low. You've got the Reserve Bank saying that inflation over the next 6-8 months is going to remain below 4%. That's their own forecast. And under those circumstances, they didn't even consider 50 basis points. They said they didn't even talk about it. So under what circumstances would they consider? Well, clearly, under no circumstances, because this is as good as it gets in terms of a reason to be more aggressive on interest rate cuts. That tells you this is a group of guys that don't want to take much risk. They want to be purposely conservative. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to unsettle the currency. They don't want any of that aggravation. Business as usual, steady cuts, and ensure that they give the market what the market expects.
But this isn't business as usual. The South African consumer is highly, highly indebted. They are hurting. Businesses are hurting, big and small. We need growth in the South African economy to generate jobs, full stop. So where does that side of the equation come in when they're in the target range, Kevin, of inflation?
100%. So there is an argument that says that when you've got inflation under control and you've got it pretty much where you would want, then you can afford to look at the other areas of policy debate that you can focus on. And the obvious is, what are you doing to help in terms of the growth dynamic? And you would say very little. Obviously, they would argue that steady cuts in interest rates do help. They would argue that keeping the currency under control helps. They would argue that keeping inflation under control helps. Those are all valid arguments. But the question is, could they be doing more? And there's no doubt that under current circumstances, they could. And there's no doubt the economy would benefit from a more aggressive stance from the Federal Reserve. And to be honest, we've seen many other emerging markets do something similar. I was looking at Chile in a lot of detail. And over the last year, Chile has cut interest rates 10 times on 10 separate occasions. There are many central banks, emerging market central banks, that have been more aggressive. We tend to be one of the most conservative, one of the latest in terms of cutting rates. So we are very fixated on getting inflation at least below 4.5% and keeping it there. And this is a central bank that has become very risk adverse. Now, they would argue, of course, that if you want to grow the economy, you've got to look at other policy initiatives. You've got to look at, what are we doing about infrastructure? What are we doing about education? What are we doing about a whole range of other policy choices? And that's fair comment, right? But you can't sit around waiting for everybody else to do something before you do something. So you would hope that there would be scope for a more assertive monetary policy for a period of time. That doesn't mean you've got to get reckless. That doesn't mean you've got to take interest rates down to a level that is dangerous. But I think this environment could justify a slightly more aggressive.
If you were the South African Reserve Bank governor, what would you be doing right now? Where would interest rates be sitting?
So if I was the governor, I would have taken interest rates down at the outset 50 basis points and another 50 basis points. So if you go to September, I think there was an argument to do 50 basis points. I think now there's a bigger argument. The reason is, if I can just quickly explain, in the outset, when you start to cut interest rates, you're starting from a point where interest rates are highly restrictive. So even if you cut interest rates, let's say 100 basis points, you've still got highly restrictive interest rates. It's not like you've gone into a stimulatory process and now you are trying to boost the economy and you run the risk of all kinds of other factors unfolding. You've still got fundamentally restrictive interest rates, even if you took rates down 100 basis points. So at the outset, you could afford to be more aggressive. And as you get closer to where you want to stop, then yes, you would ease up and go back to 25 basis points. But I think it would send a good message at a good time. The other thing, if I could just highlight this, Bronwyn, is that post the GNU, South Africa has a positive economic sentiment that has emerged. Now, that is just sentiment. It's not investment. It's not capacity building. It's not employment. It's just sentiment. A better good feel factor. Now, those opportunities don't happen all the time where the country comes together and it feels better. And you've got to use those opportunities wisely to build the momentum. So the question is, what are we as a country doing to take advantage of this positive sentiment? I looked at the medium-term budget. It did nothing to take advantage of the sentiment. I looked at the Reserve Bank, very cautious, not taking advantage of the sentiment. And so we run the risk of allowing this positive sentiment to lapse. We're not galvanizing, we're not energizing the economy. It just naturally fades away. And then we look at it and we say, oh, but why is the economy not doing better? Because we had the advantage, we had the positive sentiment, we never built on it. I think that this was a missed opportunity, not purely from a monetary policy perspective, but also from a psychological and confidence perspective.
Kevin, before I let you go, I do just want your view on the geopolitical environment, which is heating up, and how are you reading the situation?
So obviously the world has coped with this reasonably well, I would say. If you look at the disruption in the Middle East, it's caused havoc with the Suez Canal, for example. Normally every day about 75, 80 ships go through the Suez Canal. At the moment it's about 20, 25 ships. That's a massive disruption to shipping through the Suez Canal. And we've been monitoring to see, is it causing a price effect? Is it causing a major problem with the supply of goods? And there doesn't seem to be a huge fallout, and the oil price remains reasonably under control. If we look at the crisis around Russia, Ukraine, has that massively disrupted global trade, global shipments, the oil price? No, it hasn't. So from a purely economic point of view, the world is actually coping with this quite well. But you get a clear sense that there's this ongoing risk that this thing can escalate and it can get out of control. And more recently, obviously, around Russia and the Ukraine, and then it could get totally out of control. And I think that the world is living with these geopolitical risks on a sort of ongoing basis. You can see the markets are not fixated on it. They fixated on what Trump can do. They look at these risks in the background, they monitor them, but they're not pricing markets according to that risk. Something else would have to materialize. So what we're doing is we're monitoring a range of factors that would indicate that this is getting a lot worse. We're trying to speak to people who know more than us about it. And what we're trying to gauge is this getting out of hand? And so far, you would say, not yet, not at the point where it's massively disruptive. I think Trump will try and end these skirmishes fairly quickly, and I think he has got a lot of influence in terms of the supply of arms and the supply of other support measures. So he probably could do quite a bit to try and end it, and I think that would be beneficial. But I am, we would have to say, quite surprised at how well the world has coped with what is fairly significant difficulties in certain parts of the world.
Kevin Lings, Chief Economist at Stanlib, thank you so much for joining us here on BizNews.